Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, all you business professionals? How are you guys this week? Welcome back to the 34th episode of the Master the Start podcast, presented by GoMahi.com. We have a very unique episode ahead for you guys today. Today we have, Julian Ocampo. And the only reason why I paused is because, you know, I wanted to make sure I said his name right. Julian is very unique. I actually went to college with him. He took over his family business after he graduated back in 2016. He is now running a restaurant that has 150 plus employees. They're going to be growing to 10 locations by the end of this year. And it is just fascinating hearing from an individual that worked his way up the ladder and into the ownership position in his family business. So just hang in there. It's going to be a good one today. It's a little unique. We haven't had anyone that entered a family business to this point yet on the podcast. So you're going to pick up some things that you wouldn't expect. So, like always, settle in, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Also, please comment on your thoughts about the show. It would be amazing. Seriously, it can be good or bad. Just make sure you comment. Most importantly, enjoy this week's episode of the Master of the Start podcast. Forgot to tell all of you guys one last thing before I let you get into the episode. We have some big news here on the Master of the Start podcast. We are letting, or we are having, a couple of incredible individuals join our team. Big shout out to Ryan Reeves. He is going to start doing the editing of the show. The editing is going to get significantly better. We'll have a new opening and closing, a couple new intros. It's going to be sweet. The second person that we're adding to the team is Diamond Kelly. So big shout out to Diamond. She's going to start working on Master of the Start social media content. So we're pumped to have both of them on the show. And now we can get back into the episode.
All right, Julian. Thanks for joining the Master of the Start podcast. We're honored to have you on the show.
Thank you, yeah.
And just to start, who is Julian and what's one thing that not a whole lot of people would expect?
Well, I think, you know, me as myself, I'm Julian Ocampo. I am the oldest of four siblings. I am the only boy, so I have three little sisters. So I think that like really defines or helps define who I am. I grew up playing soccer, so I always had that like motivation to do better. My parents always had also, you know, more motivation to do better. So I kind of saw that from them, got that from them. And yeah, and like, you know, I grew up and went to North St. Paul High School, then to University of St. Thomas where we met. And, you know, from there, played soccer too and got my MBA at St. Thomas. And after that, you know, I've been done with school. I met my wife and now we have restaurants and we have a puppy, we have a baby and everything. So
a lot going on by the age of 25. Uh-huh. So yeah. And 25, 26?
No, 25. Still,
25.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's start by just talking about how a 25-year-old becomes co-owner and VP of five restaurants.
Well, I mean, I think I had it like the easy way, you know, and you know, when I saw the question, five restaurants, we actually have seven right now.
Oh, okay. And, there we go.
And then like, I think you can count, we're in the new Minnesota United Stadium too as a vendor. We have a nacho stand in there and we also have a food truck outside. So I don't know if you want to count that like as eight and nine or just like an eight, but then that's another thing we do. But like I said, you know, I think I had the easy way in. It's a family restaurant. They started in 2003 with just one small location in Minneapolis. My mom had the recipes from Mexico. And, you know, they just worked regular jobs until, like, they finally decided, let's try something out. And I think, you know, their hard work, apart from, I don't know, you know, some something that, like, God wanted to do and, you know, kind of push it off. And then they managed it. So I grew up with it. I was, like, 10, I think, when they opened the first one. So I was there every day, you know, with them or didn't see them all day and they came back at night. And I guess I learned everything from bottom to the top. So that's how I, you know, had the way in to the co-owner and VP and making big decisions for the restaurants, I guess.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So what are the big pros and cons to entering a family business, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest pro, why I like it so much, is that I have a say in what happens. You know, if we go throughout school and you get a job, you start at the bottom, right? Which I did the same here. But since it's a family place, my opinion really matters. And I think since I went to school and I was like the first to graduate out of my family, my parents, you know, didn't go to college. Then my sister went to college too. The young ones are going now, are like, you know, getting ready to go. I think that's a big pro, having a big input in it, having my parents under, like, you know, listen to my opinion, seeing what we decide to do, you know, work out or not work out and learn from it. But the biggest, I think, con is, you know, the family thing, that there's a line between family, you know, and business. And sometimes, you know, sometimes they get crossed and sometimes they're not supposed to get crossed. But, you know, with so many restaurants and employees and problems and all that, you know, too many moving parts. I think that's the biggest con, just like the whole family thing and how, you know, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to like do something that's bad or wrong, you know, with your family. But yeah, that's like the biggest con.
Yeah. So off of what you were saying with the whole, like, the family, balancing family and business, like, do you guys have any structures in place or any way to actually make it so you can separate the two things and you don't have hard feelings outside of that business?
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, they're there, you know, the power is there. Like, I can't do everything, you know, I can't make decisions for everything. And, you know, in terms of like paying things, you know, they're the ones that sign the checks for vendors or for anybody else, you know? So there is that, but there is like a, you know, lower, in the restaurant, like a structure, I guess, where, the employees are, then like the supervisors and the managers, and between the managers and the GM and us, that's where like the lines get kind of crossed. So there is a structure, but sometimes, you know, with like with stress or with short deadlines or with, we need to make decisions now. That's where I think the lines get crossed. But that's just the nature of a restaurant. You know, restaurants are just go, 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 you know, all the time, every day. If something goes wrong, if somebody doesn't show up, or if something runs out, you know, it's stressful. So you got to make decisions right away. And that's where I think, you know, the lines can be crossed, because a decision can be made and it wasn't the right one, but at least it got us through that problem, you know. It's kind of that idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm really curious about that kind of stuff only because, like, I'm going into business with my brother.
Got it.
And we always discuss, like, we always have to love the business. I mean, love each other more than the business, and then we'll be fine. Like, the moment that we kind of switch that mindset, then we're going to have troubles.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, you know, one of your questions is, you know, somebody that, or what advice you would give to somebody who wanted to own a restaurant or a business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really just like, know who you're going into business with. Obviously, you know, he's your brother, so you know him. I mean, I think it's easier for us too because we're family owned. You know, we're not like five different people that have different backgrounds that are all investing, that all are putting, you know, their time and money into this project. I think that's where, you know, things can go more wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a family, I mean, like you said, you have to love each other more than the business.
Yeah. So how do you continue to grow the business in your own unique way when, well, I mean, I'm sure the family has done things a certain way over this entire existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's like the biggest thing I think we're facing now. You know, if you know our restaurants or a little bit about them, we have four different types. I guess you can count like two more of the new ones, like the nacho stand and the food truck. That's a different type. But the very first one started off as a fast casual taqueria. So that's like a taco shop. So it's counter service. You come up to the window, you order, and it's all like fresh, handmade, you know, everything. It like takes time. So then, you know, people understand that, and they, for the most part, they do. But now I think everything is going to really like fast, 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 in and out. Whereas, you know, that's where they started, it became really popular. But now I think it's getting too, like, the wait time is getting too long for people. So I think that's what we're focusing on now is, my parents were really successful in the past, but to continue their success with the same food and you know, flavor, we need to speed it up. So that's what we're focusing on right now, changing it from the fast casual to the full service to the one in the Skyways that we just opened. It's like a Chipotle style, you know, you build your tacos, burritos, everything, you know, down the line. That's what I think we're going to, you know, be focusing on more you know, making sure people can come in and out and still enjoy the same authentic food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is a long wait time considered, like, in your mind?
Well, for our food, I think 10 minutes is like maybe pushing it a little bit more. But that's like regular for like masa. Masa is corn dough that you have to like form and cook both sides, and then you bring it out and put the meat in and everything and all fresh toppings that make it really fresh. And that it has to be like eaten right away. If you let it get cold, then it's hard to like reheat, you know, because it's a different type of, you know, it's corn dough. It's not like flour, like a flour tortilla that you can just throw in the microwave and it'll warm up. Corn dough is different. So I think 10 minutes is like a good, but it might be pushing it now. 15 and more for like a fast casual, I think that's too much, you know.
Really?
You go into Chipotle, you can get in and out. I mean, or you go into any other place now, like Noodles, you know, they're within the 10-minute range. But anywhere now you go, I mean, they just focus on quality and speed, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, you guys are still built off quality, so that's also a tough part, right?
Exactly. But see, like, you know, the customer is the one that you have to make sure is happy, whereas they might understand that it takes longer to make the quality, but they're still, you know, upset that it's taking long, or they're hungry and they're like hangry and this is, you know, taking over. And they're like, no, I need the food now. 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes is too much, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we're trying to solve that, because if we can solve that, then we won't have any of those problems in the future.
This wasn't one of the questions that I had for you, but we're going to explore multiple different things, I think, here. So what is your primary customer? Like, is it, when are your busy times? Is it like night dining? Is it mid-afternoon? What is it?
Well, it's different for each type of restaurant. So for the full-service restaurants, it's just, you know, we have a big rush in the lunch. People that want to come in and enjoy, like, a, you know, sit down and go back to work. Obviously, dinner and on is where we get, like, a lot more people, because, you know, people want to come out and enjoy a meal, maybe have a drink or a beer or a margarita. And then they stay and chat a little bit. So, like, that's the one for the sit-down ones. For the express location, it's all lunch, you know. So those are all, you know, people that work in the Skyway. So a lot of people, like, that we went to school with, I see them down there. And then for the taquerias, that one, those are, like, different. Those are, like, busy all the time. They're busy in the morning when we open. They're busy at lunch. They're busy during, like, 3 and 6 before dinner. They're busy from 6 to 9. And even, like, Friday and Saturday, we open those late at night. So people that go out to drink and everything, you know, and after they go out to, like, parties or go out to, like, the nightclubs, mm-hmm. we're open until 4 a.m. So they all come in and it gets packed until, like, you know, 3:30 in the morning. So that's what they're all – each one – is built around that, you know, that different customer. So that's the front, yeah.
How do you guys manage that extreme difference?
I think really it's just a trial and error, you know, kind of thing. I think obviously with the ones that have been doing that longer, because, you know, they opened in 2003, those obviously gave us info on those, so we knew what to do with those. When my parents opened the full service restaurant over here in St. Paul in 2011, they didn't know anything about full service, like nothing. I remember being in high school and being one of the servers, and it was a mess. It was chaotic. Like the door was out the line. Like it was, you know, things were being made. Things were taking too long. You know, people didn't know how to make the drinks exactly. It's trial and error. You know, we did really bad like that first week. And after that, we figured out the kinks. And now, you know, now we do full service. We do Chipotle. We do caterings. We do food truck.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's actually a good transition because you brought up serving. So yeah. where did you start in the company, and what age did you start, and what did you learn going from one step to the next?
Well, I mean, like I said, my parents opened in 2003, so I grew up with it. So I started with whatever they wanted, you know. I was 10. So I was bilingual too. I still am bilingual. So that's a really big, you know, it was really, really helpful when, especially back in 2003 when, you know, there weren't like as much, like the Latino population wasn't as big as it is now. It was really helpful because then I would be cashiering, you know, a little 10-year-old that could speak perfectly English, perfect Spanish. And I was good with numbers and math, so money was, you know, easy. And then when we trained, you know, cashiers and to do that, I would go sweep the, you know, the back or the floors, or start, they would start showing me how to prep. They were making wash dishes, take out the trash. You know, it's just literally my parents believed in showing me everything from the bottom and making me, like, you know, all the way up. So then, you know, that's pretty much how I started, just everything. I wasn't afraid to get down and dirty. I'm still not afraid to get down and dirty. And I wasn't, oh, but I'm the owner's son. I don't want to throw out the trash. That's for the employee, you know? No, it's just like, you just get into it, you know? Work is work. And my parents always taught me that. So whatever they wanted me to do and learn, that helped me get to the point where I am now, you know?
Yeah. And you think that made the transition of going from just little son that's helping out to co-owner of the business, did it make it a little easier for people to respect?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, even in, you know, movies, you see that this multimillionaire wrestler or whatever business owner has this kid that is always partying or, you know, whatever, and enjoying everything. And then all of a sudden something happens to the dad, or then it gets transferred to the son or the daughter. And, you know, they don't know what to do with it. And people are always like, you know, I mean, it's just that situation. And I understood that from a young age, that I needed to be, in order to be respected, it wasn't just because I was the owner's son or the owner's daughter or the owner's kid. I needed to know exactly what was going on in the business, so nobody could come to me and say, you're doing that wrong, because I know that I'm doing that right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it really helped. It really set, like, the foundation to continue to grow into where we are now.
So what are the keys, you think, that you discovered when you were kind of working at that lower level that kind of helped you now run the business?
Well, I think it's really just like hard work, you know? And what also helped me with the hard work and dedication is playing soccer. Because, like, it's the same thing. If you want to get better, you have to put in the work. I mean, especially with sports, you're not just, I mean, sure, you could be, like, really talented and, you know, be lucky, be born like a really good person, but a really good player. But even if you're talented, there could be somebody that's outworking you and it's going to be better than you eventually, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think not being afraid to, you know, get down and dirty and hard work and not say no to mopping or doing anything, you know, that was really like, why am I doing this? Oh, and apart from that, my dad is like a handyman. So it wasn't just restaurant stuff. We would put up, like, siding, and he'd want to do his projects with windows, and we put in windows, and he'd show me all that stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really like an all around thing that, you know, showed me that hard work pays off. And, you know, as cliche as that might sound,
yeah,
hard work pays off. And I saw that in soccer too, because I don't know if you know too, but I played at St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And I played, I mean, all over, and I was on, you know, championship winning teams and stuff like that. So all that kind of tied into each other to, you know, really instill, like, that hardworking pays off kind of mindset.
Yeah. So when did you actually know you wanted to go into the family business, and how did you, or to this day, how do you know you actually want to do that and you didn't just kind of back your way into it?
Yeah, I mean, thinking back on it, I don't really know, like, why. I think, you know, I was talking to my wife about it too, and, like, she's like, yeah, why did you want to do it? And that really got me thinking, like, why did I want to do it? Because I could have done anything, you know? I mean, I really liked animals and biology. So in high school, I really liked biology and AP biology and all that, and I liked how things worked, and I liked to see cells and all that. So I thought, like, I could have gone into, like, you know, like, somewhere in the medical field to understand, you know, the human body and all, you know, do something like that. But then I did want to keep playing soccer, and I knew my parents, like, eventually would need help. So I think it was, thinking back, it was more of, like, keeping my family or my parents' hard work alive, I think, is what really made me decide. You know, sacrificing that, like, that really long trip of, you know, going through the schoolwork for the biology and for the medical school and all that. Cause I know it's a long ways, you know, it's like 10 years and it's a long work. It's a lot of work, but I didn't want to sacrifice playing, you know, being able to play soccer or being able to see my family.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I found, you know, St. Thomas, that's a business school. They had soccer, and it was a perfect fit. So then that's when I decided, you know, I'm going to go to St. Thomas. I'm going to get my business degree. I'm going to play soccer, and then I'm going to move in, you know, help my parents until eventually I can take it over and keep going, or keep the restaurants going, you know, for them, or for just for, like, the family name. Because, you know, it's crazy what we've done, because we're just a little, we're a family. We have We have seven, you know, restaurants. And we have one other one that we're going to open this year.
Yeah, that is crazy.
And you're stopping at 10. And then, you know, and not really, like, not anybody does that. I mean, there's corporations that are big that are, you know, it's called publicly traded. Or, you know, there's always that you can see, you know, there's examples, but not like a family that does that, you know. So I think it's paying off. And I think that's the main reason why I wanted to do, like, the restaurant business full time is to keep my family's work or my parents' work alive, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this might be, I might have just heard it wrong. Did you just bring up a random restaurant there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't going to bring that up, but then I included it in what I was explaining.
What restaurant did you just bring up?
Oh, wait, which one? I mean, like a restaurant name for like an example?
No, I thought I might have just heard you say Snuffy's for some reason. Oh, it was maybe my imagination.
No, that's nothing. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what Nuffies is, but
okay, cool. I'm just saying
we have one more restaurant that we're going to open this year.
Is it same deal, or is it something completely different?
It's the same as the newest one, so Express. You know, so it's going to be like more tailored to down the line, in and out kind of thing. You know, really simplified. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I did ask this, but now I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys pick your locations?
Oh yeah. I think that's the biggest thing. I think there was a question on here that said, you know, like, what's the secret of keeping customers coming back? I think location is, I think, more important than you think. You know, there's so many, like, articles you can read everywhere. You know, it shows you it's this trend now, or it's this restaurant, or it's all authentic, or it's the best service here. But, you know, I think location is within like the top two most important things. So you can be like the best restaurant or the best burger or the best anything and be like in the middle of nowhere. And sure, people will go out there, you know, to do it, but to go try it. But if you're in a really busy corner, or you're in a popular place, no matter what kind of food you have, like, or products you have, you're always going to have traffic. So, but the way we pick locations is, I know a lot of the people like suggest to us, come to this place, or why aren't you guys in, you know, in Woodbury? So we went into Woodbury. Why aren't you guys in downtown Minneapolis? You guys have some in, you know, on Lake Street in Minneapolis. Why don't you go downtown? So then we looked for a place in downtown. We opened downtown. So it's really just like that. People want us to go into like the west side of the Twin Cities. So, you know, like Minnetonka, like Plymouth, Maple Grove, that area over there. We haven't explored that yet. I think it'll like put more strain on us because the restaurants will be so far, you know, apart.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, mainly why we choose it. We check the demographic too. You know, we're not just going to open in a place that is saturated with, you know, Mexican restaurants. Will we just be another Mexican restaurant? And plus, like, I think the name of Los Ocampo really already carries like a lot of, not like fame, but, you know, people have heard of Los Ocampo or, you know, something like that. That they, I've heard of that place. Oh, I saw it at the new stadium. Oh, I drove by their place on University in Dale. So I think, you know, that helps us too with the location.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mainly just where people think, you know, tell us we should go and where we think we're going to be successful with a demographic.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you said that location is in the top two.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
The other one is like your food, you know. I think, you know, service is a big deal, obviously. But if you don't have like the product, if you have the best service, I mean, people go there for the food, and people will sacrifice service for the food, for the quality, for the taste. You know, I mean, just me being honest, we have some customers that are regulars that eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner at one of our restaurants, or like, you know, some restaurants. And when we see them, you know, we see them, and it's really funny because I think it was in Minneapolis that this happened, but he eats in St. Paul. And he, you know, he saw my mom and he was like, yeah, I always go to your place in St. Paul. But now I was in the area here, so I came here. And then he's like, yeah, I've been going there every time, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah. And then he's like, you know, sometimes they treat me really bad. And they, like, they don't even, like, what's it called? They don't even, like, they forget my order. They lose my ticket or something happens. But, man, I don't care that they treat me this bad. I really like your food, you know?
Yeah.
That's, like, firsthand experience that, you know, service is there, but sometimes you might have a mess up. But if the food is like number one, like it convinces people to come back, it gives them like the main reason to come back. You know, like they might like not expect the best food or the best service, but they know they're going to get the food.
Mm-hmm.
And like this is not me like being throwing shade at a restaurant.
No,
every time I go to a Buffalo Wild Wings, I know I'm gonna get like, you know, my my hot barbecue, you know, boneless wings, but the service there is it's so slow, and like, you know, they got like, you know, high school kids like on their phones and, you know, dirty tables and everything. But I mean, I go there because I'm gonna get my wings. I'm not gonna go there because I'm gonna be treated like, you know, like a king. So
yeah,
you know, that's, well, another, you know, my personal experience. So
how do you guys make good food? I know there's more to it than just making good food. Like, do you guys have a, I don't know a lot about the restaurant business, but do you just have like a head chef that comes up with all of the different types of meals? Do you have your parents come up with it? Do you come up with it? How do you pick your vendors? Like, are you switching vendors out if something's not good?
Yeah, that we do that a lot. I mean, there's like, you know, smaller vendors that we like to support and like to use, but you know, a lot of the times they're out of a product, and you know, when we're managing such a, you know, big companies, you know, we need to be able to count that those products are going to be there, because if they're not, then we have to scramble to find it somewhere else. But it, honestly, like all the recipes, everything that's like the main, like us, Los Ocampo, is from my mom's like kitchen, you know. So I remember growing up in her, even in this house, like I grew up in this house, and now we bought it from my parents. So now our daughter's going to grow up here like me.
That's awesome.
I remember being in there like young, and she would come home with all the ingredients. And when she came home with those ingredients, I knew that she was going to make this food that we now sell to people, you know? So it mainly started from my mom, you know, the sopes, the quesadillas, the huaraches, huarachazos, everything like that, tamales, tlacoyos, all my mom. And then from there, you know, they had the same recipes, but they kind of mixed them up into different things. Like, then we brought in the enchiladas, we brought in chiles rellenos, we brought in, you know, a bunch of different stuff. And then when we opened in the Suburban, that's when we, like, you know, got somebody that was really good. He's still with us today. And we made him, like, one of our, like, main, like, chefs. So he comes up with different ideas. We actually have a new menu that we're about to roll out that has, like, two or three pages worth of his ideas. You know, so we give him the liberty of creating these things for that restaurant. But then everything else, you know, kind of stays the same. And we have monthly specials where we just kind of, you know, mix up some ingredients and create a new plate for like the, you know, the special. So each month has a different plate. Apart from that, I mean, I'm not really like the mindset or the mind behind the food. It's mostly my parents and the chef, and then some other people that, you know, some other cooks that have ideas that, mm-hmm. you know, because we all take ideas from everybody. But yeah, it's mainly just family recipes. But at, you know, the big restaurant, we have a chef that we like to bring in his ideas because he has some good food.
Gotcha. So mm-hmm. when you roll out a menu, are you pretty much committing to that menu for a certain amount of time? Or do you look through like the stuff that's eaten and the stuff that's not eaten and switch things up?
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, it only makes sense to do that because, I mean, you're not going to, you know, take the burrito off the menu and like, why are you taking the burrito off the menu? It's, everybody loves it. Oh, so we wanted to try something else. Mm-hmm. So it's really, we look at the numbers, how much we've sold. You know, how much labor goes into making that product and if it's worth it to keep it on the menu. And if not, you know, we get rid of it, we bring in something new, or we just make the menu smaller, you know. So with this new menu, we're bringing in more seafood. So it's going to be for the summer, but then we're going to keep it for, you know, for a year. And after that, it's like every year that we look at, you know, what else can we do now? Or we also look at like trends too, you know. So like this last year, you know, it was like a lot of like I don't know, more vegetarian, more like, you know, vegan options. But now it's like switching out of that again. So now it's, I don't know what it is now. I haven't looked at it, but you know, that was like a little trend. And yeah. You know, so we keep up with that too.
Yeah. That's super interesting.
Yeah. And it's really, like I said earlier, it's really just trial and error. You know, if you come up with an idea and you think it's going to be really popular, but it's not, you know, you learn from it. Take it out and move it and put another thing in.
So I know maybe you already hit on it because you said quality of food and location. Uh-huh. So are those the two keys you think that's really made you guys successful? And what are the couple of things that you guys think you've done poorly to this point?
Well, yeah, I would say like location has really helped us a lot. And obviously like the food, people keep coming back for that. I know we've had some hiccups with service, but that's just like what we run into for being like so big and being family owned. We have like, you know, managers at each restaurant that help, but you know, they're only so helpful. You know, they're not us. They're not like in there all the time, or they're not you know, on top of everything, you know, so that's where we run into problems with service. So that's like a flaw. I know we have maybe marketing. We do some marketing, but I know that, you know, we're supposed to do a lot more and kind of, you know, really keep hitting people, you know, being in front of people's eyes, like at least 7 times in like one day or something, or something, or I don't know what the stats are.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll really like help boost your sales. But, I think, you know, service, we've kind of lacked on, but we always work on it. And marketing, we barely do some marketing. I mean, there's like little things we do. So I think that's something that we're not really utilizing, you know, to the best as we can, because we have a Facebook page for each, you know, restaurant. Mm-hmm. We have an Instagram page for each restaurant. And apart from that, you know, there's a bunch of things online you can do, and there's newspapers and, you know, radio ads and stuff. But we're not really like capitalizing on that as much, yeah, as I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. How big are you guys? Like, how many employees do you guys have, and what are you trying to manage?
I mean, I don't know how much we have now, but I know we had 150 at the beginning of the year. So I think we maybe have more, yeah, less. And if we open this new one in Minneapolis, then it's going to go up a little bit more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we deal with. We deal with a lot of you know, managers that help us manage the employees. But yeah.
So that's got to be one of the hardest parts in the restaurant business. So mm-hmm. How in the world do you guys hire?
Well, you know, that's, yeah, what is the greatest challenge of restaurant? It's the people, you know, because, I mean, in any business, it's, you know, the people you have and, you know, how much effort they put in, or, you know, how good they are, and how to retain them, keep them happy so they can keep doing the job and all that. But, you know, with restaurants, it's a lot different than you know, like a corporate job that you have to go to school for, and you go through like a lot of interviews, and then you finally get selected. Here, it's you know, it's just a restaurant. So if people come in and they are looking for a job, if we have a space and they're interested in starting in the kitchen, or they're interested in starting as a host, or, you know, somewhere in between to make them grow, then, you know, then we take them in. There are times where we're low on staff, and we do like a post somewhere that we're looking for people, and some people come in for like that. A lot of word of mouth from, you know, employees that we have now, they tell their friends or their family members, or, you know, people they know, hey, they're hiring over here where I work. Do you want to come work for it with us? They come in, we interview, we see if they like it. If they do, you know, we put them in. But it's really just, you know, however they come in. Some people walk in and they ask for an application, and, you know, they've been with us for forever.
Really?
So it's just, yeah, it's just however it can happen, you know.
So is it pretty high turnover?
Oh yeah, restaurants is like one of the highest, you know, turnovers. It's like right now we're going through I don't know what happened, but one of our restaurants is like a lot of people that have been there for a while now, a couple, like, you know, at least like 5-6 months. They're all, you know, they're all like moving on now, and I think it's just, you know, it's just a restaurant business. It's mm-hmm. They come in, they enjoy the restaurant for a couple months or maybe a couple years, and they're like, what? It's time to try something else. I might go work for another restaurant, or I might go work in, I don't know, some type of different, you know, restaurant or business.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is turnover, and it's something that we deal with. It's every day or every week, every month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm fascinated to hear your response to this one.
Yeah.
How would you respond to a customer who wrote a poor review about your guys' service, or really just, yeah, how do you solve that internally, number one? And is that something you even deal with?
I mean, yeah, I mean, every restaurant, you know, is not perfect. I mean, it's just the nature of a restaurant that people are going to like it and people are going to complain, you know. I keep trying to come to like, to accept it. But, you know, sometimes I understand that we messed up, and we make that, you know, apparent. Like, we agree that, you know, we accept it. Then after that, people feel, you know, relieved or better. And I think then that's all that they wanted. You know, sometimes people do, you know, go over the top and are rude that there was a problem. You know, there have been times where we have given them, you know, like a free meal, or like, you know, discounted their food and give them like something else, you know, to make them happy. But yeah, I mean, poor reviews and bad reviews happen all the time. A lot of times we try to respond to them. I mean, I can't keep up with all of them, or I honestly, me as, because I would be the ones to respond to those. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't even want to respond to each one of them. Like, it's too much work, or it's me as like a I know it's as like a restaurant owner and as like as one of the owners and the customers, you know, are supposed to be happy. I mean, it's just a weird, you know, it's a weird position that you apologize and that's all you can do, or you can go on more and give them more stuff. But then, I don't know, you know, it's just, that's how we manage it. A lot of times we apologize, they understand. A lot of times they don't understand, but there's nothing we can do apart from that, you know, just accept the review. And if it's just, it's a low star rating or it's a 1-star rating, then that's all we can do. There's nothing more.
Yeah.
Move on.
That's tough though. It's tough having your business graded by everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And it's gotten a little like kind of more out of control now. Because like I said before, you know, back in 2003, there weren't many like Latinos here or like Mexican restaurants. Like there was, you know, El Burrito Mercado that's been here since the 80s. Taquería La Hacienda, he's my uncle and he's been here, you know, since like the 90s. Then my parents started in 2003, you know. So I think back then, like, you know, a couple of years, 13 years ago, 15 years ago, there was more of an understanding of what, you know, authentic Mexican is. Now I think anybody, any family, like, you know, we're family, but some people can open, or not even like a restaurant, they can just have a food truck, or they can have just like, you know, some like a small place somewhere. And now there's, you know, now there's best Mexican everywhere. There could be a best taco here, but down the street on the left, there's another place that has the best taco. Then on the other side of the street, on the other city, there's another best taco, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, being judged by, you know, for every Yelp or every Google or every Facebook review or anything like that, I mean, yeah, I mean, it helps. And yeah, I think it hurts more than it helps. But it's really just the, you know, the customer going in and experiencing for themselves instead of, you know, really putting a lot of attention on those reviews.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's too many restaurants now, and it's really just like subjective what you think is best, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, what advice would you give to someone interested in opening a restaurant on their own?
Yeah, I mean, it's always that's always like a good question. I mean, I don't have to really say anything. I would just say, you know, look at my life or look at what I do. Do you really want to do what I do? Because, you know, one of their very first question is, what is one thing you enjoy doing that many people wouldn't expect? Mm-hmm. Is I really like to work every single day. And as a restaurant, if you're going to open a restaurant, you're going to expect to be on your phone every day to at least get one call or at least check on it every day, go in every day, or to solve a problem every day, or just anything every day. You know, there was another restaurant owner that like said, before he opened the restaurant, he had like a photography like business. And after that, he wanted to do this like pizza place. And we talked to him and he was like, I didn't know it was going to be every day. I feel like a farmer milking the cow every single day. I was like, well, it's true. So it really, you know, if you're going to open a restaurant, make sure you have like a business plan, or you have like a strong foundation. You're not like opening a bunch of loans and hoping that it's going to work out. To pay it all off. Make sure you have like a strong core of like a restaurant. If you're going to be an American like restaurant, make sure that you have like the burgers, you know, things that are American. You can have some different things on the menu that kind of give it a flair, but if you're going to be Mexican, make sure you have Mexican. You know, like I've seen like the, in my opinion, restaurants that have sushi, burgers, tacos, barbecue, you know, a bunch of different things. They're not focused on one, you know, specific food. So I think that's where they go wrong, because they're trying to do so many things right that they're not doing one main thing right, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's where we've had success, because we do authentic Mexican, but we do bring in like, there was a couple years we had a burger and that was successful, but we never let go of the Mexican. You know, and like we have like new street tacos, but we never let go of the straight corn tortilla, meat, cilantro, onions, and radishes. You know, we have different ones now, but that's the main thing.
Gotcha.
I think it's really, yeah, just that, like being ready to work, having a good idea, a way to, you know, support it, and being ready to work every single day.
So people always talk about like, you know, you're going to have to work hard if you enter the restaurant business or you open your own business. What is considered working hard? Is that 2 hours a day? I don't think so.
No. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. If you have it really controlled and you have the right people and you know that they're doing a good job and you can trust them, yeah, maybe working 2 hours a day is like your hard work, because then after that, you're just like maybe checking cameras or checking sales or making sure things are, you know, doing right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's really like putting into perspective now that we have so many restaurants and you have to be everywhere like all the time. If we just had one, life would be so much easier compared to what we're doing now. You know, because you would be there and it'd be like what we just talked about. Like, I know that people are doing their job. I know that I have everything set up right, so I can go check on things and head out and be okay that, you know, things are going well.
Mm-hmm.
But when I have to do that with 7 restaurants and my parents have to do it too, and we're all like a team trying to manage everything, it's nonstop. Yeah.
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 So how is the restaurant industry changing?
Well, that's a good question, because I think it's changing into like the new problems that we're trying to solve, of like the wait times and keeping the quality good, but wait times low and turnover fast. So I think people want, I think the now like the more fast, not fast food, but fast service restaurants are like where everything is going now. You know, you're always going to have those like full service restaurants that are known for, you know, their food and for their for them being restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Applebee's is a good example, because they're full service. They have, you know, food that you can expect the same everywhere. They have the same beer that you can expect everywhere, you know, all that stuff. Whereas like, you know, I mean, Chipotle is another good example, because you know what to expect every single place you go. So, but the best thing I think where I'm seeing more of is just kind of small menu restaurants with quality food, with fast service, and that's it. So it's like a small menu, good food, and fast service. That's like where it's going now. So like smaller restaurants, I can just go in and out, and people can, you know, enjoy food and still be on time to the next meeting, or still make it through their little lunch, mm-hmm. you know, thing.
Mm-hmm. Does a smaller menu also help margins?
Yeah, it does, because you know, if you have like a smaller menu and a lot of like the same core ingredients go into the whole menu, then you know how each thing is priced out. Whereas like if you have a bunch of different things that, for example, if you have some ingredients that are only used in this plate and don't even touch these other 15 plates, then that keeps it like confusing, because you're only buying those ingredients. They might be expensive, you know, only for that product. But if you're buying, you know, for example, rice and beans, those are like a good example, because they go on like everything. So that's something that you can just mix and match into here. And you're really using like 5-10 ingredients, but you have, you know, 15-20 plates. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really just like the same numbers, but rearranging them different. So I think, you know, I mean, using, you know, Chipotle again for another example, I mean, they only have, what is it, like barbacoa, chicken, steak, and like a veggie option now, I think, or like a vegan option. That's why they only have those proteins, because they're just grabbing a tortilla or a bowl, you know, and rice and beans and the meat and then just toppings. So it's really a small menu, and they know what they're doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really profitable. They're making margins on everything because they have such a small menu. If you have a big menu, it's really hard to manage.
So mm-hmm. Do you have some big menus?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
moving, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
So how big is your biggest menu?
The one at Suburban, you know, our Suburban restaurant, the full service one, that's the biggest one. I mean, I don't even know how many plates we have on there. We have like, I don't know, 10 appetizers, like a whole page of like burger, or not burgers, they're tortas, salads, soups, and then we have like the traditional, then we have the sides, then we have the dinners, then we have desserts, then we have the fajitas. You know, so I mean, Mexican restaurants are known for being, especially full service ones, for having like a really extensive menu of all types of things. And especially this new one that we're going to roll out, it has even more menu options, and it has a seafood menu option on it. You know, so that's like where we're doing like the most work, but we're doing it because that's where the chef is, you know, so he can handle it all.
Gotcha.
But at the other restaurants, we like to keep it simple, you know, use the same ingredients for the same food, and yeah, I mean, yeah, we keep the quality like that.
So with a menu that extensive, how do you even keep track of inventory? Like, are you running out without noticing all the time, or are you just...
No, I mean, it's not like, you know, very like high-tech inventory, you know, software or anything. It's really just having your, you know, we have our order sheets of how much we have on hand, what's our reorder point, you know, when to reorder, and then how much we're expected to use in a week. So I think we order twice a week, or we can just order once a week, you know, from our vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Our biggest vendor being US Foods, and then we buy from, you know, Sysco Foods and the other smaller vendors I mentioned earlier. But it's really just that. It's really just how much do we have on hand. We're expecting, now that we're going into summer, we're expecting to buy more because we're selling more, right? So people are starting to go out more, enjoy more, and, like, you know, taxes, I think, just, and, you know, we just got them back, or we're getting them back, so people are, you know, want to spend some more. So that's where we notice that we're going through things faster, so we should order more. Gotcha. But then, you know, come August, when people go back, when kids go back to school, you know, the parents are aware that they're going back to school, you know, people are starting to play sports, sales go down. So then we notice that we're using less, so we order less, you know, then they're just the reorder points change.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's really just that simple. And, you know, sometimes it's true. We don't order enough. We run out. We're kind of scrambling. But we run to, like, some, you know, Sam's Club or somewhere to get some things. But then after that, you know, we fix it. But, yeah, I mean, ordering too much, you know, it can be bad if the sales aren't there, because then you still have to pay for the product. But it means that you can use that product, you know, further down. You don't have to order again.
Gotcha.
It's really just a balance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You make it sound so easy running 9 restaurants.
Yeah, I know. I know, but it's just, like, it's crazy, but it's just, like, a manageable crazy, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Well, then yeah. I think we'll just hop into the quick fire questions now. And honestly, I tell every guest, I don't even know why I label them quick fire anymore, because they're just usually not quick.
Yeah.
So the random question from our audience this week is, what is the craziest experience you've had while running the restaurant?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, I thought about this one because, I mean, there's been so many, but I think the biggest one was, I think it was New Year's, not last year, but the year before. My wife and I, Emma, we were like, it was New Year's night. It was like 10 at night. And all of a sudden we get a call from, like, the police or from the alarm system that there's been a break-in at our biggest restaurant. And so I hop onto the cameras. I don't see anybody in there. All I see is the firefighters, and I see water everywhere. And then the fire marshal called me. He's like, yeah, there was a pipe that burst. I'm like, oh, my goodness. And at that same time, that was like New Year's Eve, my parents, my family, they were all on vacation in Florida. And Emma and I were here, you know, managing the restaurants while they were gone. So then apart from it being us two only, it was New Year's night, New Year's, you know, Eve. We went over there. We cleaned up all the water. The fire marshal, you know, they all closed everything up. Oh, and it was also negative 25 degrees out. So we had to drive all the way over there. And then my brother-in-law, too, he was with us. So he helped everything. We got everything done. We closed it up. We closed the next day. But on the way from the restaurant back to their house in Fridley, which was, you know, so St. Paul to Fridley, that's like, what, 20, 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
We get on the freeway, and then my brother-in-law calls us, hey, something's up with the car. I hear like a noise. And we're like, what's wrong? And then he's like, oh, it's wobbling. So then we pull over, and in a negative 25 degree, like, we look, and his from it being so cold, his front right tire is like out of air, you know, it popped. I'm like, we're like, great. It's negative 25. It's midnight. It's about to be, you know, New Year's, like, the New Year's Day. So then we're taking turns in negative 25 degree weather, changing his tire. When we freeze, we run back into our car, warm up for a little bit, go back outside. It was just crazy. We're like, oh my goodness, why is this happening tonight of all nights? You know? Oh man, it was crazy. But yeah, after that, we fixed it. We brought it to his house, and we didn't do anything for like a couple of days, because we actually got sick from, like, all the cold and everything. And that's the craziest thing I can remember. It was just crazy. I don't know how we did that.
Well, that's the perfect example of having to work at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get called in, you have to do it, you know, especially when it's a pipe bursting in the restaurant.
Yeah, that's insane. Okay, second question. What skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college? I mean, you guys hire a lot of people. You see a lot of people come through your doors. You were recently in college.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, especially coming out of college, I think, you know, I mean, that's how I was. I wasn't afraid to do more. You know, I didn't want to be like just like a, well, my shift is a 9 to 5. And yeah, well, if I need to go in early and leave late, well, I need to do that. You know, I think it's really just the hard work ethic, the knowing that if you do extra, you know, it'll pay off. It might not be right away, but, you know, eventually your boss or, you know, wherever you are, people will notice. And I think that's a big thing, being able to sacrifice your free time for, I don't know, your benefit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously just like learning, being a fast learner. I think that's a really big thing, just in life and in general. And especially if you're coming out of college and you want to, you know, start your career, right? Being a fast learner and being and wanting to put in the work is, I think, two skills that are like required.
Yeah.
To do that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think you become a fast learner? Is it just being very open to learning?
Yeah, I think so. You know, if we go back to that very first question, people that I enjoy that people wouldn't expect, I really like learning. I mean, even in school, like school was a different type of learning, you know, because you have to like do learning and books and tests and all that. But just in life, just like really common sense life things, I really like that stuff. I like looking at people and how they do things and then, you know, making sure I can do it their way. And then once I figure out their way, then I want to do it a faster, easier my way. You know what I mean? So it's really just you should want to learn and, you know, learn fast the way they teach you. But if you see that you can do it better, then, you know, do it better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So I think you just kind of touched on it right there. What do you believe needs to be sacrificed for success?
Well, yeah, that, I mean, but I mean, it really depends on who you are and, you know, how much you want to sacrifice. I mean, even for Emma and I, you know, we have a baby now and we have a nanny that helps us Monday and Friday. But even that like isn't enough, you know, but we she's the baby's already a hard worker. She's in the restaurant with us when we don't have a nanny. She's like strapped down under our chest, taking tables or cleaning up things or in the bar making drinks. She was in Emma's, you know, belly the whole time at the restaurant. So I think she's used to that noise. So she's used to that movement. She's like, oh, no, no. She's super happy.
That's crazy.
I know. And the baby's super, she's super like happy to be there. She's not crying. She likes to look at things and she likes the noises. And yeah, you know, just being able to sacrifice family time, any time, you know, hanging out with friends time. You know, just, but yeah, I think it's just really putting in the work if you want to get better.
Yeah. All right, let's sum this thing up with what is one life hack a student of business should apply to their life this week?
Do you mean, so they're still in school or like they're in school and a job?
Really, it's anything. Like just anyone that's interested in business, any type of professional, what's kind of one actionable task they can apply to their life this week that will make them better?
Mm-hmm. I think maybe the best advice I would give is, if they're going to, I don't know, you know, go to a new interview or go to even just their job or their class, you know, like I remember when I was in school too, I would do this, you know, sometimes like wake up 5 minutes before a class or 10 minutes before class, you know, and going into class just because I'm going into class. I think maybe wake up earlier or get to your place where you need to be earlier. And, I don't know, maybe give it a little bit more time and not just kind of go through the motions, really kind of build up and maybe set goals for yourself that day. Today, I'm not just going to go to class or go to work and do my regular thing. I'm going to get there early. I'm going to set goals for myself. And if I'm, you know, if I need to meet a sales number or if I need to, you know, talk to so many people, I want to double that today. I want to triple it today. I want to double it today, and by the end of the week, I need to do five times as much. You know, I think really maybe setting goals that might seem like they're unreachable, make them reachable. I mean, one of the other cliche things that I get from some people once I tell them the story is like, wait, how are you guys doing it? That's like impossible. And then that's what I tell people, and then one of them responded. That's the thing with like people saying it's impossible. It's only impossible until somebody makes it possible, you know?
So I mean, true.
I like that quote a lot. And I think, you know, when I think about what we've done and what we want to do, I think that's like a big motivator for me personally, you know?
And I think that quote's huge because I can't remember who said this other quote. They were just like, the only people that change the world are the ones that are crazy enough to think that they can.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just true because it's a audacious, crazy goal that shouldn't happen.
I know.
Right.
And people, what did they say before somebody, you know, stepped on the moon? We can't leave the planet. You know, they stepped on the moon and all those people are like, oh my gosh, somebody did it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Julian, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I think that's a good way to wrap it up. And we really appreciate it.
Oh yeah, and thank you for inviting me. I know we went through some some mishaps, but we got it done, and I really liked it. That was cool. Thank you for having me on the show, and
we can keep in touch. Sure. We'll definitely connect very soon when we have a little more time, because I want to bounce some things off of you.
Yeah, sounds good.
We'll connect soon. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Have a good night. Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Welcome back, guys. Quick conclusion for this week's episode of Master the Start. Just really one thing here. Nice and simple. Your weekly life hack. Before you move on with your week, set a seemingly unreachable goal and go try to accomplish that goal. Never do just the minimum. It's as simple as that, guys. Like always, make sure you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. We're everywhere. We're just providing a bunch of good old content for all of you. Secondly, make sure you subscribe to the podcast, and we will see you next week.